And I'm at the World Center for Birds of Prey on a hill outside Boise. And I'm talking to Trish Nixon, who is a raptor specialist. We're sitting, actually, in the educational room of the Velma Morrison Interpretive Center with some wonderful artwork on the ceiling and the walls, and this is very much educational artwork as well. Trish, can you tell me, first of all, give me an overview of the World Center for Birds of Prey. Why is it here? When did it start?
Well, our facility here actually was built 22 years ago. All the buildings that you see here on the hill, including the barns where we have the captive propagation programs of the different raptors that we're breeding here, taking place. The Peregrine Fund, which is, if you will, our parent company, started in 1970. And we began with a core of biologists and ornithologists who wanted to save the peregrine from extinction. Many moons later, this facility sort of came into effect out here. We acquired the land because a big part of our program here, in addition to breeding birds and releasing them to the wild, is impressing upon the general public and people who are interested in birds how vital raptors are to our environment, not only in the United States, but worldwide, because we do work all over the world with all different types of raptors, but this happens to be our headquarters right here at Boise.
Why are raptors so important?
Birds of prey are the barometer of how things are going in the wild for people. What happens to them eventually happens to us. So for purely selfish reasons, we should pay attention to what is happening to them. I'm biased. I happen to be a passionate raptor lover. So they're magnificent to watch and learn about. But in addition to being barometers for what is happening to the environment, they're also very vital to keeping the environment working the way nature intended it to. They hunt things that have a tendency to become overpopulated if they don't have some predators to take the weak and the sick and the old out of the population. And they just keep things sort of flowing the way nature intended them to.
And your major success story here is what?
We are probably, to people who have followed our history, probably best known for being very, very highly instrumental in getting the peregrine falcon off the endangered species list. The Peregrine Fund was actually founded by Dr. Tom Cade, who was our lead person in deciding that the peregrine falcon was precipitously close to becoming extinct and needed some advocates to step in and see if this couldn't be remedied. And he and six other people got together and decided to give this a shot and see if captive propagation and reintroduction to the wild would work. And lo and behold, many moons later, 1999, the peregrine falcon did come off the endangered species list. So it was a highly publicized success story, first time that had ever happened. And we have now moved on to several other types of birds of prey. Probably in the United States, we're best known for the California condor propagation program.
And I understand the Secretary of the Interior actually made the announcement just outside this room of that the peregrine falcon was delisted. Mm-hmm. Now, you are a raptor specialist. Mm-hmm. What's a raptor specialist, and how do you become one?
A lot of people just call me bird woman around here. My job here with all of the education birds that, since you walked around the visitor center, you saw today and that the public generally sees when they come up here, I'm in charge of their diets, making sure nobody's underweight, overweight, everybody looks healthy. They all need their beaks and their talons trimmed at certain times, just like horses need to have their hooves trimmed. So I'm in charge of that, training them for the birds that we use on the stage. In the courtyard presentations, we bring birds out and do interpretations of that particular bird with them on our arm. So I do a lot of that. I take care of all their equipment. I make a lot of the equipment that you see on the birds, the falconry equipment, the jesses and the leashes and things of that nature. Basically, I'm just I'm here for the birds to make them happy, comfortable, and I'm at their beck and call 24 hours a day.
I will edit. I just took a picture of you.
Good thing about
it. Mm-hmm.
Do you need water?
No, I'm fine. There. I just took a picture of you with a magnificent bird on your arm.
Mm-hmm.
What bird was that?
It was either the golden eagle or the red-tailed hawk. I'm not sure when you were out there.
I think it was the red-tailed hawk, actually. Okay. What, from a biological point of view, what's the biggest challenge in dealing with these birds?
In the reintroduction, the propagation of the birds?
First of all, saving them. You know, if you get an injured or a sick bird here, let's start with that. What's the biggest challenge in just saving their life?
Well, we don't do any rehabilitation here. In other words, people don't bring injured birds to us. The birds that I have here have come to me from rehabbers, and they all have a reason, an injury or some kind of a handicap that precludes them from hunting on their own in the wild. So from then on, their care is in my hands. The reason we don't, for example, accept the red-tailed hawk if someone says, look, somebody found this by the side of the road with a broken wing, is that to the naked eye, that bird may have a broken wing, but it may also, which is not evident at the time, have West Nile virus or Newcastle's disease. And because we have the biggest population of California condors here as anywhere on the planet, we could endanger all those guys by bringing somebody injured here that we don't know the complete history of. So all the birds that I acquire for the education program that are going to stay here go through a period of quarantine to make sure that, yeah, he has a broken wing, but that's all he has. And obviously a broken wing is not going to be passed on to somebody else. So we don't do the rehab, but we're in touch with rehabbers, and we refer people all the time to them.
Is imprinting a problem? Do any of these birds imprint on you?
I have a number of imprinted birds, which is why they're here. And some of them do get very habituated to people the longer they're in captivity. And it's sad when a bird becomes imprinted. If someone who doesn't know the ins and outs of rehabbing birds gets a hold of a bird and decides, oh, you know, here's a red-tailed hawk chick, I'm going to take it home, feed it for a while, and then when I'm tired of it and I've watched it grow up, I'm going to let it loose. They don't realize that they have just probably signed a death warrant for that bird because he needs to have an identity as a bird. And growing up watching a person feeding him, he has now acquired an identity as a person, so when mating season comes around, he's not interested in birds at all. If you catch my drift.
I do. Thank you very much for this, Trish.
Sure, no problem.